This is Sumati Rajput from the Crisis and Disaster Risk Finance Program at the World Bank Group, and you are listening to Women in Risk Finance, a podcast series dedicated to women around the world working toward enabling faster and more reliable financial response in countries affected by climate shocks, disasters, and crises. Welcome to episode 7. Today, we're going to talk about risk pools, and in particular, a risk pool in Southeast Asia, the Southeast Asia Disaster Risk Insurance Facility, or SEDRIF. Across the globe, we see more frequent and more severe natural catastrophes. Since the year 2000, more than 100 million people in ASEAN member states have been affected by disasters, and there's been an average cost of $4.4 billion each year. Insurance solutions remain an important part of a country's financial toolkit to manage the havoc that catastrophes bring. But insurance markets in emerging and developing economies are nascent. Today, we'll hear about the role of risk pools and how they enable access to insurance solutions targeting cat risks for such markets, and how the risk pool in Southeast Asia is pushing these boundaries of innovation in this space. Our guest today is Ellen Young, Chief Operating and Financial Officer of SEDRIF Insurance Company, who is responsible for SEDRIF's insurance operations, financial oversight, and risk management. With over 17 years in the insurance sector, Ellen has built a career spanning actuarial science, reinsurance, underwriting, and financial management, holding leadership roles at Fidelis Insurance in Bermuda, AXA Singapore, and Benfield. Today, she combines her technical expertise with a passion for the region and is a co-member of the SEDRIF Insurance Company. Welcome, Ellen.
Hi, Sumati. Thank you for having me today.
It's great to have you with us. Could you tell us a bit about yourself, your professional journey in risk finance, you know, what motivates you to work at this intersection of finance, disasters, and particularly your affiliation with Southeast Asia?
Yes, certainly. So I'm an actuary by training, so insurance was quite a natural career path for me. And before joining this space, I spent about 15 years in the commercial insurance and reinsurance industry, with the last 10 years in Bermuda, specializing in pricing property cat treaties. So while I was in Bermuda, I worked on projects on climate change, especially on understanding how it has and could affect insured losses over time. And the data showed clear upward trend in disaster impact. And that made me reflect on the role that insurance could play in building resilience. And so I'm a Singaporean, and I learned of other regional risk pools, such as in Africa and Caribbean, through my previous work. So I was particularly excited when SEDRIF, the Southeast Asia Disaster Risk Insurance Facility, was established in Singapore. And so it's really nice that I have a really exciting job that I could come back to Singapore for. And SEDRIF is the regional risk pool for Southeast Asia, and the fact that it is not-for-profit also appealed to me. And because moving from a purely commercial focus to a goal for development give me a greater sense of purpose, and knowing that our work could help governments protect life and people and livelihood when disaster happened. And so for me, this was about bringing my skills into a space where they can directly strengthen resilience for the region.
Thanks, Ellen. That's a very, very motivating story for many of us who are in this space. Could you tell us what SEDRIF is, why it was established, and what does it offer to countries?
Yep, sure. So we like to say SEDRIF is a development insurer, you know, just like the World Bank is a development bank. But of course, we are much smaller. And SEDRIF is focused on improving access to risk transfer tools such as insurance. We are an actual insurance company regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore, MAS. But we are also owned by the government of the region. and is not for profit, but serving public good. And our purpose statement is to strengthen the financial resilience of people, especially the poor and vulnerable in ASEAN, to climate and disaster shocks. But what this really means is that we hope that through SeaDrift, governments can have easier access to insurance so that when a disaster happens, government already have available finance to deal with the impact of the disaster so that they can be prepared. There actually is an interesting recent study based on global data that big natural disasters slow down a country's economy for years if the losses are not insured. So the authors looked at more than 200 countries over like 50 years and found that disaster not only caused an immediate drop in growth in the year of the disaster, but it also kept growth lower for several years, adding up to 2-4% permanent loss in GDP, which means that economies never fully catch up. But the key finding is that insurance can change the narrative and that the long-term damage comes from uninsured loss. When losses are well insured, the economy is barely hurt. And in fact, it often grows faster the year after the disaster because the insurance payout help pay for quick rebuilding. And then you have initiatives like building better, which helps the economy become stronger. And this is really impactful and meaningful because we know with climate change, the disasters are predictably going to happen. But there's actually something we can do about it to mitigate the impact. So back to SeaDrift. And I think what I explained is the reasons why governments came together to establish this regional risk pool, SeaDrift. But insurance can also be complicated. And our job at SeaDrift really is to make it easier for governments, you know, from designing the right product, to placing it in the market, and to paying out quickly when that's needed. For example, last year, for Lao PDR after Typhoon Yagi caused severe flooding, SeaDrift provided $3 million in two payouts and the first within just 6 days to help the government in their recovery. So in SeaDrift work across ASEAN plus three, and we can play different roles depending really on what's needed from us. And sometimes we can be the direct insurer, sometimes we can be reinsurer to state-owned companies or other existing in-country mechanisms, but sometimes also just as an advisor helping governments to get the best deal, the best insurance deal from the market. And above all, we are here just to be a trusted partner for the government in what is seemingly a complicated process for, you know, arranging insurance.
Thanks, Ellen. That's very interesting explanation of what SeaDrift has to offer, especially given sort of the multiple dimensions where SeaDrift can step in, like you said, as sort of like an intermediary or a broker, as a direct insurer where it makes sense, or as a reinsurer for state-owned enterprises. And of course, as I said at the beginning, SeaDrift is still a young entity, and in fact, the youngest of the pools across the globe, because there's one in Africa, one in the Caribbean, and one in the Pacific as well. So what would you say are some of the challenges that are more kind of particular to SeaDrift in terms of allowing SeaDrift to actually be able to scale its offering? And what are some of the enabling factors that you think would in fact allow SeaDrift to achieve its potential in the region? So if you could highlight some of your perspectives on that.
I think the biggest challenge for me as well as for SeaDrift as a company is you know, creating the demand from the government. And you know, insurance isn't always seen as exciting because the benefits are in the losses, you know, that the governments avoid, which is probably not an easier sell than something that is tangible, that you can see, you know, such as like building a new road or a new school or something like that. And I think that's why also, you know, champions are very important, you know, champions of disaster risk finance, you know, champions of the benefits of pre-arranged finance. You know, in development banks, in donors' agencies and within governments themselves. You know, we need leaders and people who understand the value that disaster risk finance can bring. You know, which I mentioned earlier, you know, the evidence is quite clear on that front after so many years of disasters and mounting losses. But and these champions, they can shift the conversation from just awareness to action. And I think the good news is that Seadrift is not alone in these. You know, for example, the World Bank, you are our technical partner, and we appreciate the upstream work that you did with countries to create some of the enabling environments, such as having the right regulation and policy framework in place for insurance to even be possible. And then there's also other humanitarian and development actors, such as you know, the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, and the World Food Programme, who are increasingly active in this DRF space and have specific agenda and activities on those. And that creates some, I think, real opportunities for us to align the efforts and to push this forward together. But also, I think we as a community also need to better understand the country's constraints and what they actually need, and to make it easier and simpler and accessible, and to work around their constraints, you know, rather than you telling them what they should do. We need to listen better and to co-create the solution together. You know, and as you said, we are the youngest risk pool in this region of very different risk profiles, very different governments, different stages of development. And we remain very humble to learning from our sister risk pool and from the governments on what actually can work. And I think that the challenge is real, but the will is growing. And we are quite optimistic about this momentum.
Thanks, Ellen. No, I hear you. I think some of the challenges that you talk about, which are around kind of the demand from countries, having champions, I think that's a global kind of issue across the board. What's, of course, peculiar or more unique, I would say, with Seadrift, of course, is what you said towards the end, which I find fascinating. Which is the fact that, you know, unlike the other pools, Seadrift is covering countries that have very different, you know, regulatory frameworks. They have very different requirements. Some have developed insurance markets. Some have less developed insurance markets. That's where there's a fascinating kind of role for Seadrift to come in and see how it adapts its shape and offer to meet the different kind of needs of the region. Maybe I want to pick up on Laos, which is one of the countries that is using Seadrift as a direct insurer because they have the regulatory enabling environment for that. So Laos was basically the first country to access this product, you know, a few years ago, and it's been a journey since then. If you could reflect a bit on the first product and then also talk about a bit more deeply on the more recent product, which includes an impact trigger and was financed by the Global Shield Finance Facility. So if you could take us a bit through the Lao journey about the innovations that have taken place and what Seadrift did to make sure that this innovative product was placed in the market.
The history between Seadrift and Lao goes way back. Lao is one of the founding member of the Seadrift facility, and I also want to thank our counterparts at the Lao Ministry of Finance, who has been a real champion of a disaster risk finance, Mr. Somse, and very supportive in the Seadrift journey and this development of product, as well as also want to thank the Lao National Disaster Management Office. And I think this new product is only possible because of their leadership trust and, of course, their willingness to try something new. So the first product with Lao was basically one of the most, I want to say, standard parametric product, which uses a model approach. So when the rains come, it takes the rain and rain data, rainfall data, and the river gauge data, and try to model a flood footprint, which then overlay that with the number of people affected using the population exposure. So that was the first product, which while at that time it simply uses the latest technology, it also introduced some problem, which is the basis risk that is quite common in parametric product, which is a scenario when a disaster happened or happened to a certain scale, but the product doesn't pay out as expected, because obviously that uses a model approach. So what we did this time round was to use a different kind of trigger. And this is where we think this is the world's first sovereign disaster insurance policy that uses the number of people affected again. But this time that is based on the government's own data and not a model approach as the payout trigger. So basically, this is how it works. The Lao National Disaster Management Office, or the NDMO, they keep track of how many people affected, how many people are affected by disaster throughout the year. So when the numbers that they report pass certain agreed levels, the policy will pay out within 10 business days. And this means that the government can get the funding quickly, even while the disaster is still unfolding. Because the NDMO actually starts collecting the data as soon as the disaster happens. And this is quite unlike the previous model approach, where we actually have to wait for the event to be over, for the parameters of the hazard to become available before we can pay out. But in this instance, because this is using government's data and they are able to start the data collection as soon as the disaster happened, this actually makes the payout process even faster. And actually, this completely minimized the basis risk, because this is based on the government's actual information. And it aligns perfectly with the ground impact, because it's based on real number of people affected. And also, it counts the total number of people affected across the year, and it can respond to smaller events as well as the bigger event. So in this case, we are actually really quite proud of the innovation. And not because this is, you know, modeled with the latest technology, you know, or using the latest science, but just because it's simple, it's easy to explain. And it's actually a really good fit for what the Lao country needs. And in terms of the journey we took, we spent several months with NDMO to understand their in-country reporting process, as well as several back and forth with the Ministry of Finance, who gave us their feedback on what level of payout they need for different scenarios of events, you know, and back and forth, we kind of changed the payout structure a few times. So basically, we are co-designing it together. And then we also work closely with our risk broker, Gallagher Re, and the reinsurers to make sure that the product is well understood, so it get a fair pricing from the commercial market. And it actually took us, maybe close to a year to design this policy together with the government and then to place it to the market. And ultimately, we are quite proud that this actually is able to test a new way of doing disaster insurance that other countries, you know, in a more data-scarce environment might find helpful. And especially for flood, because I think that is a particularly hard to model peril. And as we know, accounts for a large part of this region's disaster loss amount.
Thanks, Ellen. Just want to ask a couple of follow-up questions based on what you've just shared. One is just for our listeners to clarify that this is a government-level policy, but has a trigger which is related to people affected. So ultimately, the money still goes to the government as budget support. The second point was, I think it's incredible that the reinsurance industry is willing and supportive of these innovations. I wanted to understand whether this affected any of your pricing discussions, for example, considering that this is, first of all, government data, but then, yes, there's lower basis risk, but then also how is the industry able to validate? So is there a secondary trigger or anything that you can share in that kind of regard with regards to anything that featured in the pricing conversations and how that was managed?
On the first point, yes, this is a government, a national level policy. So the Ministry of Finance is the policy holder. And so the funds will be paid out from SeaDrift to the government, and which they can use for budget support on quick recovery, because the payout actually goes within 10 business days as per the contract. So they could use it based on their contingency planning on what would be the best use of the funds, depending on where the disaster could happen. But actually, it's really fascinating that this NDM or reporting process actually, you know, is granular to like the village level, which, you know, in Laos, there is more than 8,000 villages, then the officials actually collect data at that kind of granularity. And on the second question on the acceptance on the reinsurance, that also took a few months of a discussion back and forth with you know, our broker and a few reinsurers who actually is very supportive that we are testing out a new method that could you know, open up new opportunities and you know, increase the demand from the region, because you know, we know that flood is difficult to model, and if there is a simpler approach, why not? And then so 2 points quickly on pricing discussion. So I think the first one is, you know, the reinsurer wants to know that there is a well-established process. And for Lao, this NDMO reporting process has been in place, you know, since many years, going back more than 10 years. And actually, it is also written into their disaster law on how this NDMO should be reporting the data correctly, factually and objectively. So that satisfies the reinsurers that there is no moral hazard. There will not be you know, any interventions by the governments to change the numbers, because now it's going to be linked to an insurance payout. And also the second element that we have incorporated into the policy is this concept we call a validation, which basically after an event occurs, there is a calculation agent which validates whether it actually rains, or whether the river actually overflowed, or whether a hurricane actually passed, you know, within several kilometers of where NDMO said that there are people affected from the disaster. So there are objective measures in place that checks that, yes, an event did happen, but it doesn't override the number of people affected, which, you know, as mentioned earlier, is based on a well-established and objective process, which is able to capture the nuance on the ground that a model would simply not be able to.
Very fascinating. Just building on that, perhaps, could you talk a little bit about some of what's coming? So what are some of your new products or innovations in product design that you're thinking about? What are some of the new partnerships that you're developing to continue to kind of advance financial resilience in the region?
As you mentioned, we are the youngest risk pool out of the four globally. So we actually have a lot of catching up work to do. But also revisiting one of the earlier points about how, you know, in other part of the world, for the risk pool, the countries, the membership in the risk pool has more similar risk profile, whereas I think in ASEAN, you know, if I can say so myself, I think we have a harder job to do, because a different development stage, they have they face different kind of perils. But also the good news is that I think because we have such a large region to work with, and that they are actually facing different risks, there is actually a very good argument for risk pooling, because, you know, first you have economies of scale from covering such a large area in terms of, you know, designing products, accessing data. There's huge savings from economies of scales. And then second is, you know, from having a very different risk profile, which means that countries, they don't face the same disaster at the same time or in the same year. There's huge diversification benefits to be captured, which basically means that, you know, this risk pooling, if it comes to scale, is going to be able to make insurance much more affordable through a risk pooling mechanism like SeaDrift. So anyway, the two priorities that our members have identified, which is actually what we are really focusing on in the near term. So first is agriculture. So as you might have seen on LinkedIn, we are working closely with FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations and six ASEAN countries to explore an agriculture risk finance facility that could potentially be housed within Seadrift. So agriculture is an important sector in the region. It employs a lot of people and accounts for a big part of the region's economies. But the fact is most farmers do not have protection today from natural disaster. And they are unprotected, and this means after a disaster, they are left to bear the cost. And the goal of this collaboration with FAO and the six ASEAN countries is to explore facilities that could, capture that economies of skills and diversification benefit that I mentioned, that could create solutions that are affordable, scalable, easy to access, easy to implement, so that farmers can get access to insurance and recover quickly when disaster strikes. And so that's first for agriculture. And then the second is another big focus is on public assets, which is also a big part of the economy. So things like schools, hospitals, roads, public infrastructure. So we are working with Philippines to strengthen their national insurance program for public assets, including potentially developing parametric options for quick funding after disaster to make sure that the services can continue as soon as possible so that the economy and the community can recover quickly. And at the regional level, we are also starting conversations, with interested partners and DB on how we could make protection from natural disaster a standard part of building new public assets. We know that there's huge economic growth in the region, there's population increasing and more infrastructures are being built. But the gap is also widening because every time we build something new that is a new asset that should and could be insured. So there can and should be a way to make insurance more automatic and simpler every time, a government wants to build a new infrastructure. So basically, in short, I think the focus for Seadrift for both areas is about, closing the protection gap and making insurance more accessible to our member government. And of course, we'll continue engaging with our member governments to identify areas where Seadrift can help, whether that's through a new products partnership or strengthening existing programs.
Very interesting, and indeed both very powerful and impactful kind of areas. And it goes to show sort of the diversity in terms of economic drivers as well, right? You've got obviously agriculture tends to be key. And then in the ASEAN region, we're seeing development in infrastructure expanding rapidly. So focusing on those seems very relevant for the region. I'm going to pivot a little bit from very Seadrift-specific questions to just you as a professional working on risk finance. If you could offer advice to other women working on this topic, what would that be? And, what are some of the opportunities to drive impact?
Actually, I think this is a quite a friendly and a collaborative space. So bring your own strength. So for example, I'm an introvert. So I'm often not like the loudest or the most outspoken in the room. But then I focus on stuff like execution and attention to details in my role. And I hope that this strength can help Seadrift achieve them. And I think risk finance needs many different kind of skills, from technical expertise to relationship building, communication, problem solving. There is space for everyone to make a difference. In terms of impact, it's just doing things you can to close the protection gap and to make insurance easy to use, simple to access.
Thank you so much for sharing your journey, Seadrift's journey, and also some of the innovative partnerships, solutions that you're bringing to the region. It's been a fascinating conversation. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Sumati, for giving me the chance to share, and thank you for listening.
Today's podcast would not have been possible without the contributions of the Crisis and Disaster Risk Finance team. Special thanks to Anusha Mary Vincent for producing this episode of the podcast series. Mm-hmm.